the real Hans Sachs and his fellow master singers in 17th century Nuremberg, immortalised by Wagner in his opera Die Meistersinger von Nuremberg. BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM. We're on digital radio. You can also listen to us live online in high-definition sound. It's 1 o'clock. Time for the news, read by me, Jonathan Swain. The Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, has insisted that the Conservative Party is absolutely united on the issue of Britain's relationship with the European Union. He was responding to comments made by the former Foreign Secretary, Lord Howe, who said David Cameron seemed to be losing control of his party and was running scared of his Eurosceptic MPs by trying to renegotiate the terms of Britain's membership of the EU before holding a referendum. Pressure's also mounting on the Prime Minister over the legalisation of gay marriage, which will be debated in the Commons next week. Senior Tory activists will shortly deliver a letter to Downing Street in which they call for the measure to be abandoned. The Pakistani politician and former cricketer Imran Khan has denounced the killing of a senior member of his party as a targeted act of terror. Zahra Shahid Hussain was shot outside her home in Karachi just hours before a repeat election was to be held in the area of the city due to allegations of vote rigging. Her funeral will take place within the next hour. Reports from Syria say government troops have launched an offensive to recapture the rebel-held town of Qusayr after weeks of fighting in the surrounding area. Syrian state television said government forces had surrounded terrorists in the town and had destroyed what it called nests of their leaders. The Foreign Office is investigating reports that French police are questioning a British man in connection with the deaths of his two children. The bodies of the 5- and 10-year-olds were found at their flat in Lyon yesterday afternoon. The authorities say they've arrested a 48-year-old divorced British man. Talks between the police and Republican and Loyalist leaders from Northern Ireland have ended with a commitment to non-violence. 2 days of discussions were held in Cardiff aimed at resolving tension ahead of the marching season. And finally, the weather, a dry and bright afternoon for many northern and central parts, although it'll be rather dull near eastern coasts. Cloudier in the south, with showers near the south coast. Tonight, cloudy with rain or drizzle in most places by dawn. And that's the BBC News and Weather, with a time at 1:02 past 1. And now, as promised here on Radio 3, the Early Music Show, and as part of our Wagner 200 celebrations, Lucy Skeeping looks back on the original Master Singers of Nuremberg.
A few months ago, I found myself with a couple of days to spare in Nuremberg. It's everything you'd imagine a real old German town to be. A fairy tale silhouette of pointy roofs and wood-beamed houses, tall rounded towers, and here and there fountains with lifelike statues of the city's great and good. The powerful burghers and civic guildsmen who remind us of Nuremberg's proud past as the home of some of Germany's most important merchant families. Just up the hill towards the medieval castle, you can pop into the corner house that once belonged to the artist Dürer, his kitchen and print shop now beautifully restored. And a little further down across the Pegnitz River stands the statue of one of the city's most important inhabitants, the 16th century shoemaker and master songsmith Hans Sachs. Little did he know that 300 years on, he'd be the star of one of the 19th century's most beloved operatic works, Wagner's Meistersinger.
Thank you.
colourful entrance of the guild apprentices, the journeymen and the master singers themselves, including the hero of it all, the great Hans Sachs. Part of Act 3 of Wagner's most ebullient opera, his anthem to the glory of German art, the master singers of Nuremberg. If you're familiar with Wagner's opera, you'll know that he based it on real 16th century German customs and characters. Hans Sachs really did exist. The guilds of cobblers, tailors, bakers and so on that make up a large part of the opera's chorus were an integral part of town life at the time. And the song competition, judged by the masters and their guildsmen, which forms the dramatic backbone of the opera, was likewise based on fact. It was in the 1840s, when he was musical director to the Royal Court in Dresden, that Wagner began reading in earnest about the history of the master singers. And he was fascinated by what he discovered. Their singing contests were actually an attempt to revive the art of love song as practiced by the medieval knights. What's more, they were extremely particular about how these songs were constructed. Each one had to follow a prescribed set of vigorous rules, so they weren't just a means of artistic expression, but a badge by which the influential mercantile classes could demonstrate their mastery over craft and art. And in the hands of the honest artisans of Nuremberg, the songs took on an eccentric, provincial quality, a workmanlike obsession with rules, titles and tradition that Wagner found both amusing and irresistible. Part of Walter's prize song from Wagner's opera, which he hopes will be good enough to win him the hand of the goldsmith's daughter, the beautiful Eva. One of Wagner's prime sources for his opera was the 17th century book by the scholar Johann Christoph Wagenseil, which gave detailed accounts of the real master singers of Nuremberg, their lives and their songs. He certainly did his homework, but of course the opera is nonetheless a 19th century romanticised portrayal of the truth, shaped to suit Wagner's own specific ideals. So what do we know about the music of the real master singers? Well, let's start with a song by the most talented of them all, Hans Sachs. Sachs was born in Nuremberg, the son of a tailor, towards the end of the 1400s. After travelling, he began work as a shoemaker and then took up an apprenticeship to become a poet and a master singer. He was a family man. His first wife bore him 7 children and his second brought with her 6 more. We've no reason to doubt his contentment in either coupling, but I expect this song may have touched a nerve with some of the other members of the Nuremberg Guild at their regular singing sessions. It's the story of a Venetian merchant whose work takes him abroad for some 4 years. On his return, he finds a 2-year-old child in his house. "Whose boy is this?" he asks his wife. "Listen," she says, "one night when I was asleep and thinking of you, an icicle touched my lips and made me pregnant. Now, isn't that a miracle?" The merchant knew she was lying, and 14 years later he got his revenge. "Wife," he announced, "I'm bound for a foreign land and I will take the boy with me to learn my trade." In Turkey, he sells the boy to a merchant and returns home without him. "Where's my son?" cries his wife. "Well," replied the merchant, "the sun was so hot that it melted him into water, just as his father, the icicle, would have done." The wife gulped, but spoke not a word.
Zu Venedig ein Kaufmann saß, der über Meer gefahren war, nach Kaufmannschaft, als ich es las. Im 4. Jahr kam mit reicher Habe. Als kam in das Hause sein, sah laufen im Saal allein ein 2-jähriges Knäblein klein, in weißem Haar. Sprach, "Es ist der Knabe." Die Frau sprach, "Hör, in einer Nacht lag ich und war ganz wund und so herzlich an dich gedacht, ein Eiszapfen herunter, als ich vom Dach von des Natur ich schwanger wurde. Ist das nicht ein groß Wunder? Schau an, mein Mann, von diesem Eis gebar ich dieses Knäblein weiß. Der Mann vermerkt den List mit Fleiß und Wohlverstand, dass sie ihr Ehe trochen. Tät doch, als nehm er sei nicht wahr. Als Knab alt war, 14 Jahr, sprach mein Weib sich an, ich fahr in fremde Land 3 Jahr und etlich Wochen. Den Knaben will ich nehmen mit, dass mein Handel lehre. Dem Weib gefiel der Anschlag nicht und wehret dem Mann sehre. Zuwiderbringen verhieß, da sie ihn ließ. Da fuhren's über Meere, da verkauft den Knaben frei einem Kaufmann in die Türkei, fuhr wieder heim, die Frau, die schrei, wo hast mein Kind gelassen auf der Reise. Er antwort, da wir fuhren hin, die Sun so überhitzig schien auf deinen Sohn und hat auch ihn zerschmelzet, schwind zu Wasser wie ein Eise. Die Frau den List gar wohl verstund, dacht an ihr falsch Fußstapfen, stillschweigend sie die Wort verschlund, recht wie ein Hund einkrapfen. Darum, wer weit ausreißt, der schau, dass ihm sein Frau, dieweil es kein Eis zapfen.
The Icicle by the real 16th century Hans Sachs. A slightly racy cautionary tale sung there by Harmut Heine. Sachs tells us that he composed that song in Nuremberg on the 20th of February 1536. But in truth, only the words are by him. Basically, the master singers were poets rather than tunesmiths. Their creative writing was what you might call a hobby, I suppose. A few of them were even musically literate. So we find songs on such diverse subjects as religion, comic stories, historical themes, fables, and even riddles, all set to melodies that everyone already knew. In short, the popular tunes of the day. Here's another example, this time by the Nuremberg barber and surgeon Hans Volz, another real-life character who makes an appearance as a coppersmith in Wagner's opera. It's quite solemn, this one, a sort of Lutheran rant about death and sin. One contemporary painting shows a master singer guild meeting in action, the men dressed formally Puritan style, sitting on a small raised platform, while opposite in a pulpit stands the singer, his hands gesturing like a classical orator. One can easily imagine he could be spouting forth a song like this. Jesus proclaims how bitter death comes to all those down here who've lived in lust. O death, how harsh art thou! Even a man who seems to live in peace, who does his job right, isn't burdened by sorrow and enjoys his food and drink, even to this man death will be terrible. Not exactly the sort of song to take you home humming into the night.
Am 21. Caput tut Jesus ira schon an zeigen wie bitter und schwer zeitliche Tod sei. Bei allen denen, die hier in Wollust Okay.
Kettentone, a song by the master singer Hans Fultz, performed there by Hugues Queneau.
Bestens, wo ich's kann, von hübschen Freunden singen, als ich's gelehrt habe. Ich reite durch fremde Lande, wo sag ich manche Hande, wo ich die Freunden fand. Die Freundelein vom Franken, die sehe ich allzeit gerne, doch ihm stehen mein Gedanken, sie geben süßen Perle. Seid die feinsten Dirnen, voll Gott soll ich entwirnen, spinnen wollt ich lernen. Die Fräulein von Schwaben, die haben gulden Haar, so dürren's nicht fragen, sie spinnen überall. Wer in den Flachs will schwingen, der muss sein kein geringen, das sag ich euch für wahr. Fräulein von Bayern, die können kochen wohl, mit Käse und mit Eiern, ihr Kuchen, die sind voll. Sie haben schöne Pfannen, weiter dann die Wannen, heißer dann ein Kohl. Die Fräulein soll man probieren, ein Zeit und ein Mann war, die Zeit steht um mit Schieren, es wird sich alle Tag. Worten, Alte, zum Wein muss ich mich halten, alldieweil ich mag.
That's a bit more like it, a catchy dance song from 16th century Nuremberg in praise of the Fräuleins. I always have an eye for the Franconian girls, writes the anonymous poet, and Schwabian girls have golden hair, but as to Bavarian girls, their cooking pans are warm and beautiful. Then finally, with a little sigh, the writer admits to being an old man whose only company is a bottle of wine. Of course, Nuremberg wasn't the only German city with a master singer tradition during the 16th century. Guilds of singers existed in many towns, and they sometimes communicated with each other, exchanging songs and favourite tunes, all under the strict control of the civic authorities, who made sure that the rules were kept, particularly when it came to moral or religious issues. The first singers' company probably originated in Mainz sometime during the 14th century. By the 16th century, there were master singer guilds in Strasbourg, Nuremberg and Augsburg, among others. We also hear of guilds in Austria and Moravia, each adapting and reworking its songs and tunes as new generations of singers came and went, sometimes until the original versions were scarcely recognisable. But in the end, it was the rules of practice that seemed to have been all important, along with respect for tradition and, of course, the hierarchy of the guild. In some ways, the whole thing seems to have been rather like a Rotary Club or a Masonic Lodge. The oldest members, 12 of them, formed the nucleus. From them were chosen the markers, or the judges, and the treasurers, whose job it was to present the accounts each year and collect the membership fees. The concerts were open to the public, and although there was some general singing and socialising, the focal point of the event, the main excitement, was the singing competition. It must have been rather like a figure skating or show jumping event. The three markers sat formally together in a cubicle that was draped in black material. No place here for flights of fancy or spontaneous bursts of inspiration. As each nervous contestant cleared his throat and began his song, every tiny error was recorded, every misplaced note or syllable was ticked off and added up at the end. The singer with the fewest number of errors was the winner, and if there was a tie, well, they ran the equivalent of a penalty shootout, with everyone performing all over again until, presumably, even the best of them made a slip. Finally, the winner was announced and awarded a silver chain hung with coins, the largest of which showed a portrait of the oldest minstrel in the business, King David, no less, the patron of the master singers. The winner was allowed to keep the chain for a whole month and wear it with pride until the next concert, when he himself became one of the markers. But of course, this being a strictly hierarchical system, anyone wanting to join the guild to take part in the contests must first study with one of its members. There's a witty scene in Wagner's opera when the character of Beckmesser approaches Hans Sachs with his prize song in the making. He asks Sachs for his opinion. Sachs, who's at work in his shop, agrees. He'll mark the errors, he says, by beating his hammer against his cobbler's last. Clearly, Beckmesser has much to learn, and he gets quite cross as Sachs keeps stopping him mid-flow with loud taps.
Jetzt fahret fort.
Bin ganz verwirrt.
So fangt noch mal an. Drei Schläge ich jetzt pausieren kann.
Am besten, wenn ich gar nicht mehr acht. Wenn's nur die Jungfer nicht irre macht.
Den Tag seh ich erscheinen.
Atmen und frischen Mut. Da denk ich nicht an Sterben. Überall werben um jung Mägeleins Hand. Warum wohl aller Tage schönster mag dieses sein? Schönes Fräulein von ihrem lieben Herrn Vater, wie gelobt ist bestimmt zum Hechtern.
Let's hear now how it should be done in a song by the real 16th century Hans Sachs. This is his rather austere Silbervisor.
Salve, ich grüß dich schon, Rex Christi in dem Throne, der du trägst die Krone.
Silbervisor by Hans Sachs, beautifully sung on an old vinyl LP by Hugues Queneau. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and we're exploring the origins of Wagner's Meistersinger. What's interesting is that while Wagner was looking back some 300 years into his own country's history, the Meistersingers themselves were also looking back for their own inspiration. In their singing, they were honouring the famous old poets of medieval Germany, the Minnesingers of the 13th and 14th centuries, whose output somewhat mirrored the courtly troubadour tradition of Provence. The word Minnesinger literally means in service to love or courtly love, and like their French counterparts, love was the central theme of their poetry, the knight striving for the favour of some unattainable lady and so on. Let's hear a couple of these old Minnesinger songs. The second, accompanied by fiddle and hurdy-gurdy, is attributed to Heinrich von Meissen, written on the death of one of the most revered Minnesingers of his time, Conrad von Würzburg. First, though, the Palestine Song, one of the best-known songs of this repertoire by a poet whose wonderful name is hard to forget, Walter von der Vogelweide. A beautiful melody, the words inspired by the Crusades. From the moment my sinful eye looked upon this noble land, I've been living in a noble manner for the first time in my life. I've reached the place where God walked in the flesh. Here a maiden bore a child, Lord over all the angels. Was not that a perfect miracle?
Das reine
two Minnesinger songs from the 13th century. The earliest Minnesang were rather like simple folk songs or dance carols, love songs that sometimes took the woman's point of view as well as the man's. Later, that love becomes less overtly sensual and more contemplative. And by the 12th, early 13th century, we find more complex and varied styles that often move into realism and rusticity, as we'll hear in the next song. It's by the poet who's widely regarded as the last and the greatest of the Minnesingers, the father of the German song tradition, Oswald von Wolkenstein. He came from the southern Tyrol, from an aristocratic family, and a good deal of his life was taken up with squabbles over inheritance. Who owned which castle and knotty problems like that. In fact, his portrait shows him with an eye missing, one way of settling a family argument, I suppose. This song's a really virtuosic tongue twister. It celebrates the arrival of spring with bird calls and the colour and the inventiveness. The way he uses the sounds of the words turns it into something quite magical.
Galant hat der schon draußen Nachtigall, der Rausch folgt in der Nacht, mit großem Mund gemacht. Meine Vogelein, Kuckuck, mein Honig, wie es brach. Kuckuck, Kuckuck, den Sehens gib mir, den will ich haben von dir. Der Hunger macht Lungen mir den Magen schier. Ach, Henne, du Welle, den Zoll, ich schuf das kleine Vieh. Komm, Zeissel, Mais, der Schluck, um wir singen. Und tobi, 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 so, 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 Sia, sia, so sing der Gauf, du Kavava, Rakumo, so sprach der Rab, zwar ich seh, oh, voll von Musik sein, das Singen mein, schau dein herein voll sein. So sang die Lärsch, so sang die Lärsch, so sang die Lärsch, ich sing ein Dröslein, ich sing ein Dröslein, ich sing ein Dröslein, das in dem Wald erklingt, in deren Zirren krachet, krachet und wackelt hin und her, ich kann unser Verhör. Zizitiko, 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 nachtigallise, mit ihrem Gesang behob den Gral. Ob tschatschitschitschitschitschitschitschitschitschitschitsch, so sprach das Hühn, laut und hoch der Zifel über die Knie. Der Esel lü, Herr Sack auf meinen Sack, rigo, 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 boom. So rüffimmel, so rüffimmel, so rüffimmel, Kerbschmack die Mullerin, Hebberschein die Bäuerin, nur trag in meine Sinn, in der Brust, der Brust, da. Ja, nun wenn ich fett, bist du gern, die Haut am Sehen, wie bei dem Bayer. Wolof, 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 Seile, Pindof, Schindig, Wölf und Rügel, die Güte, mein Mann, mit Jagen, Beißen, Rogen in dem Tang. Der Mann mit dem Zahn, die Erdbedecke, der Parallel, wo leben Berg und Tal, aus der Seher, Vogel, ein Schal, der Klingen, singen in hohen Hall. Galant hat mir schon Droskel Nachtigall, der Rausch folgt in der Nacht, mit großem Mund gemacht, kleine Vogelein, Kuckuck, Kuckuck, wie es sprach. Kuckuck, Kuckuck, den Sehens gib mir, den will ich haben von dir, der Hunger macht Lungen mir den Magen schier. Ach, Henne, du Wellen, soll ich such das kleine Vieh. Komm, Zeissel, Mais, lehr uns, guck, um wir singen. Und tobi, 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 so, 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 fideli, 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 fideli,
Sia,
a song on the coming of spring by Oswald von Falkenstein, performed there by Catherine Bott, and it was followed by the tune Alone, played on an early organ. Oswald was just 11 when he first left home to travel around the Mediterranean, probably in the service of a knight. And being of noble birth himself, he fitted naturally into the court scene, undertaking all sorts of diplomatic missions abroad, and on the way gaining a first-hand knowledge of foreign music, French songs in particular. What really sets him apart from his contemporaries, though, is that he sung his poems to polyphonic music as well as just single-line melodies. This one's for three voices. A nobleman declares his love for a lady. I am a poor wretch, abandoned by all joy. I beg your mercy. No other woman on this earth has ever pleased my heart so much. She replies, how could you want me? I'm ugly and 24 years old. Obviously well over the hill in pre-Reformation Germany.
Warum ein Fräulein vorgetan, es frag ihn zu mit tugendlicher Sieden. Genad ein Fräulein weiderlich, wollt ihr ein klein verhören mich, was ich euch untertäniglich wollt bitten. Ich bin verellend also sehr, an Freude müß ich harmen, und weiß ich wellend ich in Kehr, das naht euch vorher parmen. Ihr liebt, folgen mir euren Spott, und seid ihr krank, so helf euch Gott, der mag euch alles trauren wollen binden. An mir so leid ein kleiner Trost, darum so wehrt ihr harte Lust, zu Standes wo ihr mit Freude winden. Wann ich mag keines Helfer sein, das möcht ein jeder schauen. Ich bin ein kleines Fräulein, was wollt ihr auf mich bauen? Ach Frau, was soll der Ungeliebt? Es ist mir leider aus dem Schiff. Viel Jahr bisher müsst ich den Kummer tragen. In euren Dienst verborgen leicht, und weiß Gott wohl vom Himmelreich, dass mich nie halt in euch mein selig klagen. Wann mir kein weiblich Kreatur nie Pass gefiel vom Herzen, darum mein leiblich krank Natur miss leiden großen Schmerzen. Ihr mögt wohl sagen, was ihr wollt, sie ist nicht die, die euch errät. Das weiß ich wohl, mich trügen dann ein Sinne. Wann ich bin gräuselig gestalt, von 24 Jahren alt, was möcht euch gehen, ihr lusten Klügerine? Und kann auch weder weiß noch Wort, das keine Mühe freuen, und wär ich jetzt ein leiser Hort, es wurd euch morgen greuen. Was dürft ihr neu den Klügens fragt, euch schön die tüt mir ungemacht, euer Wanderklüg, der hat mein Herz betrungen. Erhör nicht stolz, Fräulein gemeint, zwar mir ist je gewesen leid, der dich betrügt mit seiner falschen Zunge. Und was dich übet, seh ich weit, zu nassen Augen klare, dasselbe trübet mir den Leib und macht wie grave Haare. Des dank ich euch,
weiß, da wohnt, so habt ihr Lob und Preis. Das feuchte Frauensfach tut miese Wahlen. Jedoch beswert es mich ein Kleins, ich tröst mich sicherlich eins, dass mir nicht schaden mag, kein Übel kahlen. Wer Frauen schändet eine Sach und sich ihrer Schuld rühmet, der selber fändet ungemacht, sein Lob wird ihm enthümet. Lass mich genießen, edle Frucht, durch all euer Ehr und Weiblichstucht, dass ich nie gärt, was euch mag Schäden bringen. Was hilft euch nur mein täglich Pein, ihr treue Diener will ich sein, und wär und froh von euch kein Misserlingen. Zwar ich bedarf mich solcher Knecht, euer Dienst ist mir zu wehe, nicht recht als Schaffer bedenkt euch recht, wie gern ich das sehe.
A Song of Love and Courtship by Oswald von Falkenstein, performed by the New London Consort. The Minnesinger tradition was a long and fruitful one, but with the rise of the bourgeoisie, as people moved into the towns, the courtly poet gradually became irrelevant. And although the master singers of the 16th century took their own songwriting ideals from their medieval predecessors, people like Falkenstein, their own songs now placed far less emphasis on music. Hans Sachs was to die in 1576, an old man in his 80s, but the master singers tradition did live on for another 200 years. The last singing guild in Nuremberg finally disbanded in 1774. Although it was still possible to hear singing guilds in other German towns, amazingly, right up until 1922, when the last master singer died in Memmingen. But let's end today with a final look back at the roots of the tradition, and the song by a very influential Minnesänger, Konrad of Würzburg. This is Ensemble Lucidarium, and a song which compares the seasons, the harsh winter followed by the brightness of spring, with both the pain and then the joy of love. Nevertheless, the poet tells us at the end, the man without honour fades. He who has spent his life wrapped in sin cannot bathe his heart in the dew of valour which glimmers in the first sunlight.
Thank you.
13th century minisong by Walter von Würzburg, performed there by ensemble Lucidarium. Today's early music show was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Chris Wines. And it's available in a download version. Just go to the Radio 3 website and look for downloads. It was also part of our Wagner 200 celebrations. And there are more of those later today.
Wagner 200 on BBC Radio 3. In tonight's Words and Music, Wagner's works and the words he inspired, read by Michael Pennington and Juliet Stevenson. The Sunday feature explores Wagner's heroes, including the composer himself.
What was it that Wagner felt was purer about these older Norse sources?
I guess the fact that they weren't tainted by Christianity that was part of the appeal. These were brute stories, really. They did not have the kind of gloss which later Europeans put on them.
And Kenneth Cranham and Paul Rees play Wagner and Verdi in a tale of operatic rivalry for Drama on Three.
If I'm going to be best, I need somebody to be second best.
Sunday night, Wagner 200 on BBC Radio 3.
Also from tomorrow and across the week here on Radio 3, Afternoon on 3 plays its Wagnerian Part 2 with specially recorded music by Wagner himself and those he influenced. Tomorrow afternoon, a youthful Berg and Webern following in the master's footsteps, plus our own Arnold Bax in his Tintagel, bringing the Tristan love story back to Cornwall. We'll also be looking tomorrow at Wagner's complicated relationship with other composers, among them his rejection of Mendelssohn and his cultivation of the myth of Weber as merely a Wagnerian forebear. All that here on BBC Radio 3 between 2 and 4:30 tomorrow afternoon, plus a performance of the teenage Wagner's Rarely Heard Symphony. Just gone 2 o'clock this Sunday afternoon, and time now for the Royal Philharmonic Society Awards held earlier this week. It's introduced by Andrew McGregor.
A warm welcome to the glittering ballroom of London's Dorchester Hotel as the great and the good of classical music gather together for an evening of awards, classically restrained revelry, mutual appreciation, and possibly the tiniest sip of Prosecco as we celebrate some of the outstanding contributions to live music making in the UK over the last year. And not just in the UK. To celebrate its 200th birthday in 2013, the Royal Philharmonic Society has appointed 5 international honorary members, all of whom have been transforming lives through music in some of the most challenged and challenging communities on the planet, from Soweto in South Africa to the Democratic Republic of Congo, from Afghanistan to Brazil and the USA. Joining a seriously select list of honorary members, the first of whom was Carl Maria von Weber, and which includes Clara Schumann, Brahms and Stravinsky. Well, the Royal Philharmonic Society Awards began in 1989 with the intention of recognising the talents of the many musicians, composers, producers and artistic visionaries which make the UK's concert scene so vibrant. There are awards for composers, performers and conductors, and the nominations often read like a who's who of British music. The lovely Radio 3 voices of Sarah Moore-Peach and Sean Rafferty will be guiding us through the event from the stage, and alongside them is one of the greatest of British voices, Dame Janet Baker, who'll be giving the winners their awards. But before she does, let's mingle with some of classical music's finest as they arrive here at the Dorchester and find out what they're looking forward to, why they're here, and what for them makes the RPS Awards special. And here's cellist Julian Lloyd Webber clutching a glass of red. Julian, why are you here this evening?
Well, it's a great opportunity. Well, one of the very, very few where all the whole classical music world gets together. It's a fantastic occasion.
And apart from the conviviality of the whole occasion, what are the things that you think are most important about the RPS Awards? What do they do? Which parts do they reach which really matter to you?
Well, it's a celebration of what we do with music, and there aren't enough events of this kind. But the RPS has a real authority behind it because of the people who are judging the awards and basically the whole ethos of the event. There's really nothing else like it at present.
Violinist Tasmin Little, here you are at the RPS Awards. Are you somebody who's been here many times before?
No, this is actually my first time to the RPS Awards, so I'm actually very excited about it. This feels very exciting and different and new.
But what is it that you value about these awards? Why do they matter to musicians?
I think that awards are always a wonderful way of having a recognition and a pat on the back, because we all go about our daily business and we want to give wonderful concerts, we want to make good recordings, but at the end of the day, sometimes, other than the applause at the end of a performance, you don't always get feedback from the profession. And so it's always lovely when you've been recognised by the people who also do it, they're also involved in the profession, and so they know so much about it, they know what's involved, and to have that pat on the back is a very meaningful thing.
Well, it's time to install ourselves at the ballroom at the Dorchester, where the RPS Awards are about to begin. And first we're going to hear from the chairman of the Royal Philharmonic Society, John Gilhooly, who's introducing the evening.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Royal Philharmonic Society Music Awards, presented in association with BBC Radio 3 in this, the Society's bicentenary year. It's a great joy to see so many friends and colleagues from the classical music world here this evening, members of the RPS and music lovers who personify the true meaning of the word philharmonic. Our 200 anniversary celebrations, which have already encompassed nationwide concerts, broadcasts, talks and exhibitions, continue with a raft of major new commissions in the spring and in the summer, and a New York season in the autumn. Behind the headlines, we continue to use our experience and independence to champion excellence in our work with both young and distinguished musicians, to create opportunities for composers, and to get people talking and thinking about music. This year, we're introducing 19 new commissions and supporting around 30 talented young artists, some of whom are here with us this evening. And in the past fortnight alone, we've announced a new prize for young string players and a music and film commission for the New Music Biennial in 2014. With no public funding, we have energy and determination which belies our very modest resources, and we get things done quietly, effectively, and with conviction. Over the past fortnight, debate has been raging about the true value of art, and the various arguments brought to my mind Oscar Wilde's comment that a cynic is somebody who knows the price of everything but the value of nothing. The argument for culture can never be an economic one alone. Making money has and never should be the driving force for great art. The Philharmonic Society sent £100 to Beethoven on his deathbed to ease his final months, and commissions Beethoven's Ninth Symphony not because they expected or even hoped for blockbuster success, but because they quite simply and quite rightly wanted to hear more of his music. In the UK, we have a tendency sometimes to turn inwards, to fail to absorb very salient lessons that can be learned by looking a little further from our shores. In our comparative affluence, it's all too easy to forget what happens when society undervalues culture or when culture is destroyed, and to downplay its ability to change lives and society for the better. In short, to misunderstand the fundamental value of culture. Tonight, alongside celebrating our 13 RPS Music Award winners in association with the British Council, we are presenting five visionary individuals with a very rare honour, Royal Philharmonic Society honorary membership. The outstanding, life-affirming work of our new honorary members in some of the most marginalized communities in the world highlights just how music and the good cultural health of every nation must be central to any lasting way forward. Each of our new honorary members understands the potential of music to transform lives, and this is the reason why the Society has chosen to honor them. Classical music, elitist, culture, and unnecessary luxury, I'll let you decide for yourselves. Now please join me in welcoming Dame Janet Baker and our hosts for this evening, BBC Radio 3's Sarah Moore-Peach and Sean Rafferty. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, John. We in Radio 3 are very, very delighted to be associated with the RPS Music Awards once again. So straight to the main business of the evening.
The Royal Philharmonic Society has been working for 200 years with groups of performing musicians. So let's celebrate some of those musicians with our first award tonight. It's the award for ensembles, and it's donated by Yellow Car Charitable Trust.
This award is given for any group of musicians who perform together regularly and brilliantly, goes without saying. This year, the jury singled out tremendous music making from the Britten Sinfonia, Ex Cathedra, and the Orchestra of the Royal Opera House.
Innovation has been at the heart of the winning ensemble for 20 years. It's a master at partnerships and collaboration. In 2012, it became associate ensemble at the Barbican. Its own professional choir completed its first season, and it launched an academy to nurture talented young musicians. The players continue to be up for anything. They cover a huge and ever-expanding range of repertoire and make up an ensemble fit for the 21st century, Britten Sinfonia. Please welcome the leader of Britten Sinfonia, Jacqueline Shave, and Chief Executive, David Butcher.
Hello, everyone. This really is a surprise. We must have snuck up on the rails in 2007 when we won the Ensemble Award there. So it's seriously exciting for us to win this for a second time. So.